everyone, and welcome to another episode of Pulse. This week, we will be having the pleasure of getting to talk about interim studies, interim session, and what that means here in Oklahoma. As we just moved out of special session, this is the direction that we're moving. So before we get into it, we'd like to introduce who we have with us here today. I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Michael.
Hey, everybody.
And this week we have two new guests. If you guys want to just introduce yourself.
Well, hi, my name is Damian Shade. I'm the new executive director of Oklahomans for Criminal Justice Reform. And I'm just really excited to be here to talk to you and your audience today.
Hey, and I'm Trace Savage. I'm the editor-in-chief of nondoc.com. We're an online independent nonprofit journalism publication based in Oklahoma. Pleasure to join you. I used to lead a podcast myself, and I'm glad I don't do it a whole lot anymore. So thanks for having me.
Thankless work for sure. Everybody loves listening to a podcast. Everyone thinks they can do a podcast until you get into it. And it's a...
I don't even love listening to podcasts. I've never liked podcasts. I hosted a podcast. I had to listen to myself afterwards, like, and make sure we had everything edited properly. But it's just never been my... Like, if I've got to drive to Tulsa, I'm going to just devote my time to cranking Outlaw Country on Sirius XM channel 60 and then like making phone calls as I go, you know. Other than that, I can't strap in and listen to some idiot like myself ramble on for an hour about, you know, public policy. But here I am, you wanted me, so let's do this.
Let's hope we've got a lot of, maybe we'll use a nicer word, maybe we've got lots of fans that like to listen to Mike and I drone on. I like to think it.
That's good. Well, you could, I bet I have some enemies who might enjoy making fun of me here. So, but no, glad to be here. Thanks for having me. And excited for the conversation.
Between Trace's enemies and our friends, I don't feel like we can go wrong here.
Yeah, that's perfect.
Best performing episode. Yeah. So to start us off, I want to start with, it happened before the viewers were here, but I think it's important. So I say interim session, and I got the nod that that's probably not the way we should be discussing it. I hear it in like legislative session, and then we have like special session. But if you would like to educate me on the words I should use and kind of what it means and what we might get from it.
Well, I don't know that the nomenclature is all that important, but we are in, yeah, I guess I hear people say we are in the interim. And then during the interim, they have what are known as interim studies, which are basically committee hearings, but about a general topic, not about a specific bill. They can either be the source of some really great conversations that then lead to important legislation that makes it a far distance the next session, or they can be mind-numbing, four-hour-long, brutal, pointless conversations about some sort of sticky issue that in no way is going to get hashed out in an election year, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, it's kind of a coin flip. I haven't paid much attention. So you guys educate me. What are you participating in or presenting in any of them? Or has that even been hashed out yet? When do they start? Typically after the runoff, right?
Yeah. So we actually have the earliest study that Oklahomans for Criminal Justice Reform is involved in this year is on August 23rd. That was requested by Representative Nicole Miller. And that study is about employment strategies to help people stay out of prison. The idea is for employment access and training for people while they are incarcerated. And then for those returning home from prison, really finding better opportunities for them to get job fairs, job training, and connected to potential employers on the way out. Stable employment is the single biggest factor, statistically speaking, to correlate with recidivism. So you're much less likely to go back to prison if you have stable employment. And so those investments are really, really important. We're hoping that we won't have one of our four-hour mind-numbing sessions, but actually just a really practical, here's a bunch of ways we could make Oklahoma prisons better at making the people who live there better. And so I'm really actually hopeful for that one. That's one I actually do have some hope for, even though he's absolutely right.
Yeah. Well, and I just looked it up. You're talking about House Interim Study 22-064 by Representative Miller. And next time I see you wandering around, Damian, I will have to figure out how that went You know, Matt Patterson for non-doc, his Twitter handle for anybody listening is at Matt Pat, double T, double T, at Matt Pat OKC. And he covers the county jail for us, as well as some broader criminal justice issues, as well as kind of the medical marijuana industry, the you know, rec question that's being considered right now. So that's, you know, you can follow Matt to kind of get a dose of what we're able to do in such a big and important field. But, you know, there's just so much going on all the time.
Right. So many pieces.
There's two that were filed on State Question 781. And one is very budget based. So I think we're more focused on Representative Humphrey's study, which is going to investigate and look at State Question 781 funds and why they haven't been passed down to the counties as intended, and what that money can do to help reduce crime in Oklahoma. So that's going to be our main focus on that one.
Well, I just pulled it up, and I believe that that interim study is House Interim Study 22-012, so number 12 of the year. And yeah, it says the explanatory comments are based on the findings of LOFT, which is the Legislative Office of Fiscal Transparency. It appears that the Department of Corrections has significantly decreased incarcerated offenders. It appears this will result in a savings of $30 million. This money is designated to be used in law by law to fund 781. I am requesting the study to determine the exact funding amount. And then there's five bullet points. Does this fund have current funding? How much are we currently funding? Are we already funding? Seems similar to the first bullet point. And then the last two, who should be over the funding? And then who should be distributing the funding? So Representative Humphrey has some questions to discuss. I talked with him the other day. I think he had a giant wad of sunflower seeds in his mouth when he answered my phone, because I thought maybe he'd had dental work, but then throughout the conversation he's just like spitting sunflower. It was fascinating. So he's an interesting guy. Sometimes we're both wearing bolo ties at the same time, so at the Capitol.
He's such a character, right? There's just no.
Have you ever had him tell the story of how he learned he had bone cancer? It's the most fascinating Eastern Oklahoma experience. Basically, he was campaigning for office and he was at some county event and they had a wild cow milking contest. And while participating in it, he got kicked by the cow and it broke his hip. And when he went to the hospital, you know, for surgery, they found out that he had cancer so the cow, you know, quite possibly saved his life. So it's a whole, I mean, I don't know why
we started. It's the most Oklahoma thing I've ever heard.
Yeah, there you go. So, you know, at the Capitol, right? Like Damon, you're pretty good at this. It's a lot about having relationships with a lot of different people and finding those areas where you do have some, you know, common space and some commonality, because, you know, left to our own devices, we wander into a political arena and it's easier to know where we have differences and where we disagree and that sort of stuff. I mean, as a journalist, I have a little bit of a different role, right? But as a, you know, advocate for issues, Damien, especially in a Republican-led legislature, you're looking to find ways to move things forward, to find agreement, to find conversations. Sometimes, you know, these interim studies result in big change, in big agreements being done.
That kind of pivots us, Mike, if you want to chat about the expungement reform that we saw in interim study, and then it pivoted over to actually be successful and help people as well after.
Yeah, Representative Nicole Miller out of Edmond held an interim study on expungement reform last interim session. Among the solutions that were discussed during that hearing was creating a computer algorithm to initiate the expungement process, which would aid tens of thousands of people with criminal records who would not be able to afford to get it or hire an attorney to get it. So it would make the process more smooth for lower income individuals. And during the legislative session, Nicole Miller sponsored House Bill 3316, which created automatic expungement, and that was passed, cleared the House and Senate with bipartisan support, and was signed into law by the governor in May. So that's just a short example about how an interim study can go through the process and end up with actual change for the state.
an article that Megan Prather from our team did October of last year regarding property tax protests in the state of Oklahoma. And it isn't a criminal justice issue, but it was a very convoluted situation where I'll just read you the lead of this is what the issue was last year. Oklahoma's 77 county treasurers are holding $80 million of property tax payments in escrow that they cannot immediately apportion to school districts, technology centers, county health departments, owing to valuation disputes between energy companies and county assessors. And so you think about all the people listed in that, you know, in what I just said, county assessors, energy companies, school districts, you know, just general county governance, $80 million, right? Like it was a big problem. And the outcome of that interim study last year, which was September of last year, not only did it result in the article that Megan did, and then she did kind of a follow-up early in the 2022 session about what the bills were out there on this topic, because they had about four or five of them. There was an agreement, and I think four of the five or something like that got passed into law in May of this year and at the end of the session. And it was pretty fascinating because you had oil and gas, wind, schools, county government, or like county commissioners, sheriffs, like all these groups were in favor of these reforms. And the only people against them were this guy who was contracted by like all these counties making a lot of money to do these disputes, and then county assessors. And I had a lobbyist come up to me, and it was a struggle still to get this bill passed. And the lobbyist was like, how do you vote against private businesses, school districts, county health department, your library? How do you vote against that, but vote for the tax collector, right? And so people were just could not believe, like one of these bills didn't get the required votes and they had to call it back up. And it was a whole thing. There was like a part where Speaker's office wanted to know why that bill failed. And like all these lobbyists were gathered in the rotunda comparing their roll calls. And it turned out it was just like two people had COVID and like three other people were in a meeting and five other people went, you know, so. But it was an embarrassment for a lot of people because they couldn't get these bills off high center. But all started with that interim study last year. And so when you ask about what is the power of an interim study, you can take an issue with three or four or five stakeholders who may not have the exact same view, right? But everybody goes, well, this isn't working. And so what do we need to do to get everybody a little bit bought in? You know, it's the old saying up there at the Capitol, if every party involved is not completely happy, it's probably a good deal, right? That probably means that, you know, this is something that is going to at least move things forward for the overarching state, the public. And so that just came to mind as one last year that really turned into important legislation. And so, you know, it can be really interesting to see those come about.
Yeah, I think similarly, something that's interesting that we see is, I'm sorry for our viewers, I've got congestion. So you'll hear a different version of me this week.
Is there an interim study on congestion? Because if so, I can also.
Allergies here hit different. I went to school out of state. Allergies here, that needs to be solved. It's like deadly. It's oof. But something that's interesting for us is we bring extra stakeholders to the table as well. I mean, we bring our formerly incarcerated individuals. We have ambassadors who work for us, who know the system. And I think that it's important. What Mike and I say all the time is we can bring you data. We can bring you the numbers, but we need the people behind that as well. And I think that's at least an opportunity that you don't get in legislative session when we are just kind of database, number-based, like here's what we see. It is nice to bring it a little bit more people-based for us, at least being able to say, like, here's the people behind those numbers, behind all those life without parole, behind all those failure to protect, like, these are the real human beings, is at least nice as well.
Well, I liked what you said about that Oklahoma's for criminal justice reform, you know, has the opportunity and, you know, in I suppose many ways, the obligation to connect folks who have been incarcerated with people who have not, whether that's people like myself in media who have not had that experience in life, or certainly people in the legislature who have not had that experience in life. Depending on how their legislative careers go, they might end up earning that experience. But point being that's not a dissimilar, you know, need that other interest groups have as well, right? That if you think about education, you know, getting teachers, getting parents engaged. If you think about, you know, we talked about private industry, you know, oil and gas tries to get, you know, people to remember, hey, these are your neighbors who work in these jobs, who work in this industry. Healthcare has struggled with that because of the long hours that healthcare professionals work. And it's hard to get them out of a, you know, hospital or clinic setting and actually over to the Capitol during the day and to meet people. And so when you, what you said about needing to help and encourage people who've gone through incarceration, who are in, you know, who are rehabilitated, or people who are, you know, maybe in recovery, which obviously we know that substance use can correlate very strongly to, you know, being touched by the criminal justice system, getting actual tangible humans to be at the Capitol, to be effective at the Capitol is difficult. And the thing I would say to anybody listening who works in this, you know, space or thinks about this is it's not easy, and it doesn't happen because somebody goes to the Capitol once. Like, for people who want to make that sort of impact at the Capitol, you've got to know who the players are. I say all that is go to interim studies now, meet lawmakers now, where when you know where they'll be, get to know them. Don't ask them for anything the first time you meet them. Try to get their contact information, you know their birthday, send them a nice message on their birthday, get to know their legislative assistant or their executive assistant, take that legislative assistant or executive assistant to cinnamon roll, right? Like, build that relationship. To use dating analogies in probably too many podcasts, if you just walk up to, you know, somebody in a bar and say, hey, I'd like to go out with you, you know, that doesn't go great, right? Like, you gotta find a conversation. You gotta start. You gotta get to know the person. You might just, you know, be friends and, oh, I'd like to keep in touch, you know, and then you can sort of set up to try to go out on a date to dinner, right? Well, you know, advocating at the state capitol is not that much different. If you just walk up to somebody and you immediately ask them to do something for you, they're not going to be able to respond to that positively. They get that every day on 100 different topics from 100 different people. So really, the person who establishes relationships, is there for the long haul, is not constantly asking for things, but is engaged. There are people like that in all these fields I've mentioned, and those are the lay people, the average citizens who are not registered lobbyists. Those are the lay people who make a difference at the Capitol, because they're not just there on a Tuesday and they go, well, can you do something for me on Tuesday? You know, they come every Tuesday and they make relationships, and they know when it's assistant day and they take a box of candy to the assistant, or, you know, whatever it would be. Right. And so that's my advice for anybody listening who's trying to make a difference in an advocacy sense at that building.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. I want to point out that in line with that, that I believe there is a DUI interim study by Senator Paul Rosino that was initiated, at least in part, by just a family in that district that had a daughter that died in a DUI crash. So that's the kind of thing that you're talking about that can happen.
Absolutely. A lot of good legislation starts not because an advocacy organization comes up and says, this is our priority and we file it, but because, you know, a regular family reaches out to their lawmaker and says, here's what happened. And that lawmaker may spend 2, 3, 4 years trying to push forward some sort of agreement or compromise on a bill.
Another case I was thinking of is during COVID, there was a firefighter who transported a little boy who had burns because the ambulance was not going to arrive in time for what he deemed was in time. So he transported the little boy himself, and then he was reprimanded by his department because that is, like, technically against their rules. And I think the next year, I think it was 2021, they immediately passed, or maybe it's this year, because Mike and I chatted about it on a podcast. They passed a bill that basically allows all emergency personnel to transport in emergency situations. So again, you see that, I think, skipped the interim session. I don't know for sure. I'd have to really dive into it to see. I think there are, even this year, there's 82 in the House and there's 40 in the Senate that have been approved for this session. So obviously there's a lot for people to watch that range from public safety to individualized things like we look at, but that's another case of something happened, it got activated, and then you can see that the direct result after it.
Yeah, there's more than 20 that Oklahomans for Criminal Justice Reform is actually following this year. And so between mental health spaces, crime prevention, victims resource services, and just a litany of court-related and criminal legal system things, just in our policy space of criminal justice reform, there's more than 20 that we're looking at.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you're looking for the list of interim studies, at least on okhouse.gov, it's under the committees tab. And then I have no idea where it is on the Senate tab. Senate, it's down, it has its own clipboard icon. It says 2022 interim studies under the okhouse.gov website. So please keep me apprised of anything that you guys witness or you know, see in interim studies that really turns out to be pretty interesting.
One more thing I wanted to touch on, Mike, you'll have to supplement me here as I am not very versed in it, but another thing that happens is something starts in a legislative session, but there's not enough meat behind it. The politicians, legislators, they don't feel confident enough to move forward. They might like the idea, but they're not ready to pull the trigger. And so then an interim session can come after the fact and then move forward, you hope, to the next year to be a bill. For us, that happened. That's why I'm bringing it up. And that would be with our bill 1646, which was a massive felony reclassification bill that we were hoping would go through, that will minimize some of the fines and fees and kind of just equalize across all the counties what we're seeing. Because right now, the same crime in one county could be charged completely different in another county, even though there's no additional extenuating circumstances. So we pushed it, legislators were like, maybe. And so now we're going to be doing some workshopping, Mike, that maybe you could chat about, or any scope that you have about that moving forward and how we hope for it to push into a more successful legislative session next year.
Senator Dave Rader is leading an interim study that is going to be focused on prison culture and the physical impact of crime. And so what we've discovered during our policy research is that a lot of policies, criminal justice policies in Oklahoma, are actively creating poverty by, like, excessive fines and fees are put on the back of criminal defendants, things of that nature, where you get caught up in the criminal justice system and it is extracting wealth from low income families. And what that does is that's destabilizing families, that's negatively impacting job prospects, that is basically creating more crime, because we know that people that have less are more prone to committing crimes. In a way, we're setting up an argument here that a sentencing guideline matrix like they use in Kansas, for example, and Kansas has both a lower incarceration rate and a lower crime rate. Excess sentencing, if we limit that, we can decrease incarceration, and hopefully that would decrease crime by not forcing individuals after they're out of prison into a situation where they feel that crime is the only way to survive.
That makes sense. That's a good point that, you know, sometimes bills don't quite have all the details worked out or don't have enough support during session. And so there'll be an agreement to do an interim study, try to really spend more time to work on things over the interim. And yeah, I know that has been a very complicated issue in terms of sentence enhancements and judicial discretion, prosecutorial discretion. I mean, in some ways that's a bit of a philosophical battle, right?
I just want to point out for the listener that as it relates to sentence classification, the legislation that was running during the session was based on Kansas's sentencing classification model. And if you look at the median length of stay between Kansas and Oklahoma, median length of stay in prison for violent crimes for both states, it is exactly 35 months as it is right now. So these kind of classifications don't necessarily change the most violent crimes. But if you look at property crimes in Oklahoma, the median length of stay is 22 months right now. And in Kansas, it is 11 months. So that is a double for property crimes. For drug crimes, it is 23 months in Kansas and 25 months in Oklahoma. So there is a disparity there. But as we see, the biggest difference between Oklahoma and Kansas is in property crimes.
Yeah. And I think that's important too, is when we do these interim studies, it's not just somebody being like, I randomly think we should change this to this. Like, you're looking at another state that's been successful, that's usually had something implemented for a certain amount of years. And then you're able to pull and be like, this is working for them. We've got similar, say, population, we've got similar politics, we've got similar this, that, and the other. And then that is utilized to attempt to inform our own decisions. Doesn't mean we're just going to copy and paste somebody else's model. But I think it's important to know they're being advocated for on a basis of legal evidence. It's not just random. And before we wrap up, I'm going to rapid fire the things that we are watching as well. Looking over some of the ones that we are really watching and really involved in. So the first one is a public safety and economics of crime reclass summary. That's by Rader. That's one we just chatted about. And Mark LePack as well. Also, you have to correct me on these legislators' names, because one day I want to be their friend. One day I have to learn their names first. I think that's step one.
Mark LePack. No, you got him right. He's from Claremore. He's a large man, has a carries a small pillow with him sometimes for his back. Gregarious fellow. His daughter is recently been appointed to the state Board of Education. So go ahead. I'll give you the background on anybody I know. Go ahead.
Perfect. And then we have a PWID reform summary. That's by Marty and Pei.
Okay. TJ Marty, otherwise known as DJ Party, is a Republican House member from Broken Arrow, a pharmacist. He and Representative Daniel Pei, who's an OU graduate, younger guy from Lawton, who had a bill last year he'd been working on terms of driver's license access for undocumented folks. So they're, I think they came in the same class, maybe. I can't remember, but they're both younger members of the House.
And then we've got open file discovery with Colin and Josh West and Julie Daniels.
Okay, Colin Walkie. Well, that makes sense. Colin Walkie and Josh West they have what my other colleagues in the press room at the Capitol refer to as a bit of a bromance. Democrat and Republican, urban Democrat, Colin Walkie from Oklahoma City, not running again. Josh West, Republican from Grove. They're both kind of larger men. You wouldn't want to fight either of them. And they had been pushing the efforts to require opt-in notifications for any sort of tech service that is going to sell your personal data. They didn't get that out of the Senate. Now, did you say Daniels is on that one?
Yes, Julie Daniels.
There we go. Okay, so she had kind of stopped that bit. So they've got a little bit of, that could be interesting to watch what the dynamics are. If you kind of know the behind the scenes tension that they've had, right? Like, I think Josh West said burn it down in a House Civil Judiciary Committee last session because Daniels wouldn't hear that bill and some other bills, the bill specifically about PTSD as a workers' comp coverage for first responders. So yeah, that's an interesting, like Daniels and that crew being in the same room. Daniels is from Bartlesville. She's the chairwoman of the Senate Judiciary Committee. She's not an active attorney. But she has a law degree and has chaired that committee. She's pretty principled. I like her. She knew my father in graduate school. So that was an initial, you know, connection that we had, and she's always been pretty forthright with me. But yeah, that's an interesting crew of people to lead an interim study right there.
We actually did it just for the drama. We had no idea. Nice. And then there's the 781 funding that we chatted about. That's Humphrey and Sterling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, JJ Humphrey kicked in the hip. Where's the bolo tie, cowboy hat? He's a former bail bondsman, and I have encouraged him to go find the former bursar of East Central University who stole a bunch of money and then is on the lam for the last 2 years. So JJ Humphrey's on the job. He's going to track him down, I think. Sterling, I think he's a law enforcement guy. I've seen him sing karaoke. I can tell you that. That's about all I know.
Do you remember what his song of choice was?
I think he and a couple other members were doing maybe Never Even Call Me By My Name, which was, you know, famous, made famous by David Anko, but written by Steve Goodman and John Prine. John Prine was the uncredited co-writer on that song. There's a whole story, you can YouTube it. So, okay, I've derailed us, but go ahead. What are the other?
And then a Probation and Supervision, also Humphrey, and a Data Transparency, that's Blancett, Miller, and Humphrey.
Okay. Yeah, Nicole Miller, state rep from Northwest Oklahoma County, interested in justice and employment issues, pretty popular among her peers. And then Melody Blancett, fairly pragmatic, maybe one of the more business-focused Democrats in the legislature. She has done a lot in her career, but she's more of a, God, if you say that, I mean, it sounds like an insult, you know, depending on what the blood pressure of the political left is at the time, but she's more of a business Tulsa Regional Chamber connected Democrat who approaches things and is pretty well respected by her colleagues on both sides of the aisle because of her, you know, economic and business background, if you will.
And I just want to say that this data transparency issue is really, really important to Representative Blancett. She's been working on this for quite some time.
And then we've got a victims compensation fund with LAPAC. There's substance abuse treatment options for youth. That's with Garvin.
Okay. Yeah. Senator Garvin from the Duncan area, Marlow area, involved in one of the marijuana bills this last session. And she got a pretty disgusting voicemail. You can Google non-doc, N-O-N-D-O-C, and Jessica Garvin voicemail. She got a voicemail from this guy from Sequoia County who basically threatened to come up to the Capitol and or they'll have a shoot. No, if the law enforcement comes to his house, they'll have a shootout in the parking lot. And then he said, you better bring the Cherokee Nation because my first citizenship is Cherokee and all this sort of stuff. And the FBI went out and met with him. And I think he didn't say much more after that. He'd actually emailed me. I kept his name out of the article because it was, you know, an active criminal investigation. He emailed me the next morning, was like, I'm the guy who left the voicemail and I'd like to tell my side of the story. And so I called the number he provided like an hour later. And I think by that point, the FBI had arrived and I never heard back. And I emailed him, I was like, yeah, call me anytime. I'd love to tell your side of the story. And I was informed later that the federales had shown up and maybe convinced him to shut up. So
they can be persuasive, you know, that FBI, they know what to say.
You'd think.
And then the very last one is diversion options for youth. That's going to be with Representative Waldron.
Okay, Representative Waldron. He is known as Spartacus around the Capitol because he asked whether he was calling on somebody to resign or something. I think Waukee was bloviating in a press conference and some journalist asked, you know, whether anybody else was willing to call on Jerry Winchester to resign or be fired or something. And Waldron just said, I'm Spartacus. So he's known as Spartacus. He's I believe taught at Booker T. Washington. He was, I think history. He taught Joe Tomlinson on Non-Doc's team, who's our City of Edmond civic reporter. And so, yeah, Waldron's a pretty fascinating guy. I know a lot more about ridiculous stories about lawmakers than I know about what individual interim studies they're pushing this year. So I hope your audience found that enjoyable. But yeah, thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you as well. We hope that this can kind of give, I like being able to like humanize the legislators.
I want to quickly just add two more interim studies that I was looking at. One is on court system thing by Danny Williams and Roger Thompson. That's looking at how fines and fees fund DAs and court systems. And then the last one is about sheriff's compensation, and that is by Pfeiffer. So those are just two more that we're looking at.
Sounds good. Yeah, no, Pfeiffer. Pfeiffer is, it looks like Pfeiffer, but it's pronounced Pfeiffer. Oh man, there's some good stories about him. I don't know. I don't know where to begin. Anyway, well, listen, thank you guys for having me. And if I can do anything for you, let me know. And I look forward to listening back through this later as the one podcast I listen to a month, right? So
with that, we hope you watch our other episodes and we hope to see you back next week.